Okay. Good morning, listeners. You're listening to Green Left Radio. And on the line, we have a member of Socialist Alliance and regular writer for Green Left, Peter Boyle. And so we have him on the line today, I guess, to talk a bit about a broader kind of political issue. And that is just recently, and this is what Peter Boyle wrote in an article about Morrison using cyber scare to push Trump's racist anti-China campaign, and just happening on kind of like on June the 19th, there was this basically this whole kind of fear cyber attack that happened, and basically Scott Morrison and the federal government were very quick to kind of pin it on China. And I think there's also been all these kind of questions kind of raised about, you know, so-called China kind of interference in Australian affairs, despite the fact that Australia has its own issues with secrecy and accountability when it comes to the government. And of course, there's also been this recent announcement of the federal government implementing, spending over $800 million, I think, or might have been even more, $80 million on essentially buying air war machines from the United States. So, yeah, good morning, Peter.
Hi, good morning. How are you? Can you hear?
Yeah. Yep, we can hear you now.
Yes, great to join you.
Yeah, so Peter, what can you, I guess, tell us a bit, maybe to start off, I mean, what can you tell us, I guess, about this whole sort of issue of trying to sort of pin China towards some kind of foreign interference of the Australian government affairs?
Well, obviously, it's been building up for some time, hasn't it? The particularly during the period of coronavirus, I mean, at one level, people might have thought almost, why the hell did Australia, did the Australian government choose to basically come behind Trump's blame China for the pandemic line, which was so absurd by you know, any rational judgment. China, you know, while that was the source of the virus, in this particular case, China actually had been a much more responsible actor in responding to the pandemic than the United States, which is demonstrably today has behaved, the United States government's behaved in a most irresponsible manner. But I think over the last few days, we can see a bigger picture here coming into play with this whole string of very dramatic media-oriented scare campaigns based around China. Now, the cyber scare on June 19 was one of them. And you know, in preparing the article, I tried my best to try and find out, you know, what the basis of this scare was. And when you really delve down to, you know, as good as ordinary people can get, which is to read the detail of the actual alert that was issued by Cyber Australia, there really was, this was something built up on nothing. They had detected some greater activity of a particular kind, which was more in the area of the ongoing testing of security that happens by parties all around the world, both state actors and non-state actors and criminals and everybody else. But interestingly, this particular event that happened, or escalation of events, was described by cybersecurity as not having any destructive or disruptive intent. So it really raises a lot of suspicions about why we're suddenly told to panic about a cyber attack. And the practical recommendations that the Prime Minister put forward were change your passwords regularly and take up two-factor verification. Now, that's very sound advice for cybersecurity for households, but, you know, that has applied for forever. So its main purpose, its main to-do activity, if you like, from the point of view of the Prime Minister, was to be afraid, to be scared. And, of course, through private briefings, informal briefings, be scared specifically of China. Subsequent to that, there's been another a raid on a New South Wales Labor MP's office and home Shakat Musliman. He's a sort of a backbencher in the upper house in New South Wales. You know, most people never even heard of him. He has been outspoken on some international issues, in particular Palestine. He's a strong supporter of Palestine. And he has made some defense of China's handling of the coronavirus. He has also come out and supported the rights of the Uyghurs against China. So he hasn't got a kind of a push the China line completely. But this was another big media staged event. The AFP came along, the media was brought along in tow to take pictures. Immediately the Labour New South Wales opposition leader, Jodie Mackay, suspended Shakat's membership of the Labour Party, and now they're moving to suspend him from Parliament. And then, of course, you know, the picture becomes clearer, I think, with the announcement, the most latest announcement of the new defence posture position, and with the celebrated headline of $270 billion to be spent on Australian military offensive capability. And then now we see a picture, you know, it's all about justification for a particular, aggressive imperialist military policy that they want to lock in this period. So I think that's the general context. I think it's kind of interesting that Scott Morrison, invoked the 1930s, and he says, you know, I've been thinking about 1930s, you know, these are dangerous times we're going into. The world will be a poorer place, will be a more unstable place, and we have got to get the really big guns so that we can intimidate, anyone from, and deter anyone from attacking us. But if we want to go back to the 1930s, I think a few other awkward questions arise. Remember, 1930s, Morrison's equivalents then, say Robert Menzies, for instance, you know, who was the emerging leader then, he was pro-Hitler. You know, he thought Hitler was a great guy. He thought the Nazis were doing a great job, in Germany. I mean, so, you know, if we're going to invoke that sort of period, there are some awkward questions for the Liberal Party in particular. But I think the other thing is that it's very interesting. All this sort of pointing at China is always sort of oblique, and it's, you know, not a lot of a direct owning up to it by the government, but they're pointing people that way. But it has to be said that if you look at the last 75 years in particular, last 75 years in history, how has Australia's military power been used and who against? Has it been used against a major power that's threatening Australia, or has it been used to bully smaller third world countries? Well, you know, the answer is pretty obvious. And I don't think there's a change there. I think in a world that is going to become, yes, more divided and poorer. And recently I've worked on another article looking at studies that are estimating the economic impact, the massive economic impact on the third world, flowing from the economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic. Yes, the world is going to be, there's going to be large parts of the world that are going to be a lot poorer, and they are mostly going to be the third world countries, the global south. And therefore, I suspect that any increase in Australia's capabilities is going to be aimed at them.
Yeah. I guess the kind of next question that gets flows out of this is, do you think that there are certain divisions within kind of like the major capitalist parties within Australia, I guess, on this question of China and the US? Because, people on the left or even commentators have often speculated about this so-called coming war with China. And it's quite clear that in the context of this very hardened sort of US-Australian alliance that goes back quite a long time in history, that Australia is clearly aligning itself with US in any sort of embeddable kind of war scenario. But at the same time, there does appear you know, going back to, you know, the, Kevin Rudd, the likes of even Paul Keating, but there does appear to be certain divisions on this question within the capitalist parties. And I guess what is some of your comments on that, Peter?
I think if you look at the economics of the situation, you have to question the premise of this whole discussion. I actually don't think that the primary thing here is an impending war on China. I don't think so. I think it is true that the West or the imperialist countries are increasing their military intimidation, power to militarily intimidate China. That's true. But I'm not sure whether that necessarily means war. They are trying to bully China into behaving in a more compliant way at the level of the economy. And I think that's where the current conflict, because basically China's a paradox for the most developed capitalist countries in the world. On one hand, it allowed them to escape their crisis in the late 1970s, economic crisis, by basically, offshoring a lot of their production work to China, where they could do it at lower cost. The price of this has been China has also developed economically and in certain aspects now presents as a competitor to the West, as well as, if you like, part of its production chain, its economic supply chain. So I think what we are looking at is not actually a war. China is certainly not about to attack the West. And I think John Pilger's film makes it clear. You just have to look at the map of the military bases that are totally surrounding China. And you find that, China is not, in a position to do that, nor is there any indication that it is about to. China is definitely, using economic power to try and protect its economic interests. And I think this is what it's about. Australia and the United States and the other imperialist countries are used to running the roost economically, politically, and militarily. And what they are doing now is shoring this up. And I would have to say that in Australia, on this question, unfortunately, it's the Labor Party is shoulder to shoulder with the Liberal Nationals. And in fact, in each one of these three major media developments recently that we saw, all around this one way or another around security, the first thing Anthony Albanese has said is, when it comes to security, we are one with the government. So, I think Morrison's laughing. He's laughing. He's got the Labor Party jumping straight away to say that they're one on this question. Now, does this mean that, there definitely is a debate about how exactly this is within the capitalists in Australia and in the US, how much to push China on the economic question and how to deal with that, and there are definitely a lot of unease among sections of the capitalist class about the more populist, protectionist directions that Trump points to every now and then. He plays a game around this, because at a certain level, he's another billionaire. He's in the same billionaire class, and therefore he also understands that, they do want China still to be part of their economic supply chain, et cetera, et cetera. And actually not just supply. Increasingly, particularly for a country like Australia, they want China also to sell their stuff to. And China, in the case of Australia, vis-a-vis China, that looms large, because Australia exports minerals to China and sells education services to China, takes advantages of Chinese coming to Australia as tourists, etc., etc. So in the economic...
It's like Australia wants to bristle up, get itself armed and say, hey, China, you better keep buying our stuff.
That's right. I mean, it's a very funny kind of way of doing business, isn't it? Like if you imagine it, if your neighborhood shop decided to do that, you know, put thugs outside till you come and buy our stuff. So I think that we have to question the framework which the mainstream media sets for this, you know, which is war with China. Because when they say war with China, they want to invoke the fear that China's about to attack Australia. And I don't think that's true.
And I guess going, actually saying, did you have a question you wanted to ask?
Yeah, well, just to expand a little bit further on that, like what's the history of China invading any countries, let alone countries as far away as Australia over the last however long?
None. China's been the victim. China's been the victim of invasion. No, I'm not saying China is, you know, is to be taken as a good actor and not be criticized. I support the democracy rights movement in Hong Kong. And actually I support that the rights that they are able to win and hold on to should be extended to all the Chinese people. They should have the same democratic rights. I support the rights of the Uyghurs, you know, against China. I don't think the Chinese government is, you know, blameless, you know, should not be subject to criticism. But the criticism has to be accurately, you know, applied. So a criticism for its undemocratic behavior vis-a-vis its own citizens, I think is legitimate. A criticism for China for being militarily expansionist, I think that's very hard to prove. I mean, there are two hot areas now. There's the South China Sea island buildup. Now, okay, you know, I think, you know, a variety of countries in the region are concerned about this correctly, including Vietnam. They don't particularly want China to do it. But you have to say, this is the South China Sea, right? It's like as shocking as Australia having a base in New Zealand. You know, I mean, a military base in New Zealand or something like that. It's right in its neighborhood. It is not building military bases and putting its offensive weapons on the opposite side of the world. It's just totally not true. And I don't think China, you know, when you think of it, you know, if politics is connected to economics, why would China want to do that? You know, they are doing really well economically without gunboat diplomacy. It's the West that actually, ironically, seems to need or seems to believe that it needs gunboat diplomacy to go along with its economic power.
Yeah, and I guess I want to kind of just bring it to this one sort of last kind of question, and that is, I guess, how does, I guess, this link towards, I guess, the issue, I guess, of racism, especially towards the Chinese community, and how we can actually fight back against this narrative, especially since, you know, this whole coming war against China, it's actually, you know, a kind of narrative that, you know, is actually quite common in Australia. In fact, you know, Australia always tries to portray itself as like almost, in a sense, going back to the famous sort of young adult book series, Tomorrow When the War Began. It sort of tries to sort of depict itself as being a runnable nation that's threatened by the Asia Pacific in some way, and including and China.
Yeah, I think there's racism is quite central to this. One of our readers, after I wrote the article about the cyber China, so-called China cyber threat, said, oh, well, you know, if you want to criticize China, you shouldn't be accused of being racist simply because you're doing that. Well, fine, but that's not the point. The point is that this whole political campaign, starting from Trump, China coronavirus, is implicitly or explicitly racist, you know, and it's explicitly racist. And there's so much evidence for this. I mean, just listen to Trump, you know, the way he says the word China, you know, like it's sort of like it's dripping with racism. You know, you can feel it, you know. And of course, then there's all these cases of violence that people of Chinese appearance have been experiencing and are experiencing now. That's real. This stuff is this racism is not an assertion. It is actually real. And why is this the case? Why does this campaign have to be so racist? Because the racism brings in that essential element that for a certain layer of the population is calculated to overcome the irrationality of the fear. You see, the more irrational the fear, the more, if you like, psychological dirty tricks you have to play to get people to believe it. Yeah. The more scared you are, the more you can draw on deep-seated racial prejudices about the yellow peril, about Australia being a little, white settler state in the middle of a brown, yellow sea of millions and millions of people. All that sort of visceral racism that has been built in and has a great legacy in Australian colonial history, it calls upon that. It draws it up from underneath. I think you can see it, and that's why I think it's important to bring the question of racism in, because it is part of this political phenomena. It's a central part of it. It's not just, oh, we're being critical of China, because China's undemocratic, blah, blah, blah. It's bizarre. I listened to a liberal academic being interviewed on Radio National yesterday, and she was going, oh, Australia's a democratic country. China is a one state communist country, undemocratic, blah, blah. As though that was the whole story, as though that was the story that then settles it down. Australia, the US government, these are the good guys, China, bad. Well, once you go down that road, you're lost, So I think it's important for us to say, to ping this as a racist, let's call it exactly what it is, a racist, imperialist political campaign to bully its way into the future.
And do you reckon there's a pivot, Peter, from like the Islamophobia that we've seen for the last 20 years? It's like that whole thing was getting a bit tired. People were getting a bit sick of it. It just didn't have the traction that it had, immediately following the September 11 attacks. And it's like there's this pivot now away from Islamophobia back to another traditional racist scapegoat, because capitalism needs this kind of racist scapegoat. At one time it was the Italians, another time it was the Greeks, and then it was Islamophobia, or it was Vietnamese migrants, and now like China is the racist scapegoat of choice. Like capitalism always needs this scapegoat to like divide the working class and have this kind of bogeyman that for people to be scared of.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's an actual pivot, because unfortunately it's like an overlay, or rather bringing up another layer of racism that was already there underneath. And they, because you see, okay, let's go back to the economics of this again. Now, and I think that there is some truth in the fact that not only because of the pandemic, but because globally, the pandemic brought on an economic crisis, not only as a direct result of lockdowns, closure of travel, et cetera, but it speeded up the process, or it pushed along an already latent contradiction in the global capitalist economy. So I think that we are looking at a period of intense disparities. Poverty is going to get worse. And I think it's going to be in all parts of the global south. So I think they're going to be drawing upon these racial tropes, to apply to all sections of the global south. I think actually you can see an example, particularly in Melbourne, though they've been a little bit coy about it. There is a bit of this blame, Arabic Muslims for the second round of spread in the working class suburbs. Mm. So they're already drawing on that, and I think they will draw on all of it. The figures are truly scary, by the way, in terms of the looming economic crisis in the global south. It is horrendous. At a minimum, I think they're calculating 400 million people extra added to the already 700 million people in extreme poverty. And this is like living on less than $1.90 US a day. Now that's very extreme poverty. You know, that's not a measurement of all poverty. Other people have measured using $5.50 as a more realistic thing, because they've been saying $2 a day, $2 a day for how many decades, right? As a measurement of poverty. Now, so if we bring it up, we say $5.50 a day, and we get nearly 50% of the world's population falls below that. 3.4 billion people. So we are talking about, you know, quite a big impact, you know, many more people pushed into that brackets. And therefore I expect that, you know, that this military might that Australia is building up is going to be applied in the same way it has been applied in the last 75 years, bullying poorer countries into submission, stopping refugees trying to flee, you know, to get out of the hell. They're going to be using it in all these different ways. So the whole kind of scary stuff, oh, China's about to attack us, you know, this is really crass propaganda. And, but it is powerful in terms of invoking that whole, you know, racial fear of the yellow peril, et cetera, et cetera. But unfortunately, it's going to be fear of, you know, Chinese looking people, Arabic looking people, dark skinned people of all sorts, sadly.
All right. Well, Peter, I guess we might just, we're running a bit out of time now. Do you have any like final comments, I guess, you'd like to make?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention two things which I should have brought up as evidence, you know. And I think people need to really follow these two cases. The two secret trials that are underway or being prepared right now, they're very important because they actually they illustrate not only that Australia is also acting in an undemocratic way. I'm referring to the Witness Gay, Bernard Collaery case, which was about somebody who blew the whistle on Australian secret intelligence bugging the cabinet officers of Timor-Leste, a friendly nation next door, a poor friendly nation. And the other one is the David McBride case, which is an Australian military lawyer who blew the whistle on Australian troops in Afghanistan killing unarmed civilians, murdering unarmed civilians. Now, these two cases are very important because they highlight, you know, Australian people need to be worried about a malicious state actor spying on them. It's much closer. It's not a foreign country. It's your own government. And secondly, it is a reminder. Australia is acting out there in the world, in the wider world, not as a benevolent power, but as a hostile power. And it's acting in the interests of, you know, multinational corporations, including oil companies in the case of the East Timor. It's explicit. They bugged the East Timorese officers in order to get sensitive information, which they passed on to the oil companies during negotiations about oil resources in the Timor Sea. Now, you couldn't get a clearer case than that. So this is the typical, this is the real evidence about spying and cyber activity. And we must remind ourselves, going back to the cyber question, Australia is one of the countries in the Five Eyes network, which includes the US, Canada, Britain, and New Zealand, that is actively pursuing offensive cyber warfare right now. And this is spelled out officially. You can find the documents for it. These countries are actually hacking into other people's systems all around the world. They're getting information. Of course, they've been spying on people forever, but they've also got the capacity to disrupt and to plant false information. All this is spelt out in documents. So this is what the Australian government and the other, its allies in Five Eyes Network are doing. So we should be more worried about them than worried about China spying on Australia. Which I'm not saying it's not doing, but, you know, they're not the only ones.